Hello, everyone. Welcome to Commander and Coffee Podcast, where there's always something brewing. I'm Chris, a.k.a. Cypher.
I'm Billy, a.k.a. Cork.
My name is Y. Just Y.
Just Y. That's the question I ask every single time I talk to Y. Why? Today's episode is a unique and special one. We're going to be talking about an overarching archetype, and that is polymorph effects, polymorph-style decks, polykraken, polytyrant, those style of decks. So if you've heard those terms before, that's kind of what we're talking about today. So we're going to cover a lot of different versions, from the basics to specific lists, specific archetypes, and specific win cons from there to go through. So really looking forward to that episode. But before we get into it, let's do some housekeeping stuff. What are you guys working on? What's going on in your lives this week?
Why you go first?
Oh, no. I had a really uneventful week, I'll be honest. Like, I built a polymorph deck for today. And because I live in the woods, I haven't gotten a chance to really play it yet. I've been kind of looking at some new tech out there. I think it's really cool. And I've been making coffee. I've been brewing some stuff. I've been looking at exciting new things to purchase, which isn't the best idea considering that I'm a college student. Yeah, I've just been like getting stuff done. I'm trying to front load as much as I can, seeing that I have kind of a busy weekend coming up. Might be going on a bit of a weekend hike.
Living out in the woods.
Yeah, I'm going from the woods into, you know, it's different. Like when you're living in the woods already versus planning a trip into the woods, it's like this is good woods versus, you know, mundane woods.
Ah, yes, these are the good woods, just what we all like to hear.
Speaking of good woods, Billy, what's going on in your life? I figured you'd like that one.
So anyway, softball finally came to an end. I'm finally done with that, so that's great. But being the glutton for punishment that I am, I decided to join a bowling league, a wiffle ball league, and a kickball league, apparently.
Well, you're good at the bowling one.
Yeah, the bowling one is perfectly fine. But like the other two, they are totally different than when I was a kid. I think I mentioned it before. I think this is the third time I've mentioned it, in all honesty, but it doesn't get any easier. You ever see those videos where like the people are doing the crazy stuff with the wiffle ball, like where it's like skirting on the ground and then coming up and hitting that little box in the back? Yeah, I saw someone do that.
So I was going to say no out of spite, but the honest answer is no. I have no idea what
okay, you're talking so about. Look it up. Just be like wiffle ball pitching. It's some of the craziest things I think I've ever seen. And experiencing it is insane.
It's in that same like mental category in my head as like the professional yo-yo tricks.
Yes.
Like how are you breaking gravity like that?
Yes. Aside from that, I have a couple tournaments coming up that I'm going to. I'm gonna take some of the spiciness that I'm gonna be brewing. Hopefully, come back with a big dub. You know, other than that, pretty much same old, same old.
Very cool, very cool. As for me, personal wise, you know, still the wedding season for me. So, getting close to 30 days away now. So, hopefully, that'll be over soon. It's kind of sad to say in that way, but you know, I'm tired of it, tired of planning it. I want it to be over with. So hopefully that happens and wraps up soon for me in my personal life. Magic. I've been playing a lot of Magic lately. A lot of Commander. It's been fun testing new stuff, playing some new stuff. But one of the things I wanted to bring up and I wanted to kind of talk through in this segment, you may hear from me time to time, is just good rants and good process improvements I want to try and facilitate to the community. One of the things I've noticed when I'm playing games is to make sure that we understand how to utilize priority when in a four-player game. It's a little nuanced and a little unique, but did some education with people over the weekend. So whenever you guys have priority in a turn, it's active player has priority, and then the following player after them has priority. So if you're in that third seat, you don't have to say or do anything until that player passes priority. Far too many times I see people jumping the gun and jumping priority to try and respond and waste interaction. So just wanted to clarify that with the group, some good takeaways. Make sure you kind of wait your turn in priority sequencing to gain some advantage and let your teammate slash opponents counter the stuff before you have to think about having to respond in your case there. So always make sure you guys keep that close to home and remember that, especially when testing. It's not a bad idea, as Billy mentioned he's going to a tournament, so just some good practices when you're prepping for those style of events to make sure you follow good priority sequencing. Again, if you are not next in priority order, you don't have to say or do anything.
My favorite seat to be in is like exactly two seats away from the fastest deck at the table, because like everyone focuses on turn order, but like I'm looking at my turn in relation to the people next to me, because if someone is trying to go for a fast combo, if you are the last one to respond, then people might bully you into being like, you know, they have something, make the last person in priority respond. So you get bullied if you're last to respond, but you're also pressured to respond if you're first in priority after that player. It feels like being two seats away is that sweet spot where you never have to burn an interaction that you don't have to, and you can always push it forward to the next guy if you want.
Yeah, it's not a bad point. It's tough for me in some regards, because I look at it like, if you're bullying that last person and they just don't have anything, well, then you're just dead, you know? So for me, actually, I think there's some concern to be in your spot there. Again, it's an interesting take to say, but in your spot, I'd feel more pressured to respond, because if I pass and the person doesn't have anything, we lose and I don't want to end the game. So I'm more forced to be like, do you have anything? Because if they don't, then I have to respond. And if they lie to me, which is perfectly fine, they should, then I'm sort of scripted to have to respond, right? Whereas if you're first in turn order and you pass, you kind of have two potential people that can potentially respond. So it's a little easier on you to do that. It's just that like that middle seat's kind of rough in some regards in that sense.
Table talk is allowed and encouraged. You can ask people.
I don't like to talk to people.
I know. Most people are kind of like, hey, we're nice. Minus Chris, but hey, we're nice. I'm nice. Hi, how are you?
I'm not.
Your friendly neighborhood Billy here.
Yeah, like I said, this is all spawned because I'll give a prime example. I would be in a game. Let's say I'm in a game with Billy and Y and another friend of ours, and Billy would cast an ad nauseum and it would go to me in priority, and I would think about, you know, which counter I wanted to use or how I wanted to counter. And in that, you know, second or two that I'm thinking, you know, our fourth friend who's fourth in turn order would be, I'm going to counter that spell with a Fluster Storm. And it's like, well, all right, I'm not going to say I'm passing absolutely to you now. Like, you jumped priority order. So I now get to hold my interaction. So it's just always cognizant to make sure you kind of wait and let the people in turn order respond accordingly before you have to, especially in tournaments. And that was my piece. So with that, let's kind of dive into the main topic, talking about polymorph effects. I think why you have the general overview and consensus on how these decks kind of function.
I mean, here and there, I've played at least two of them at this point. So, and we are friends with someone who played a third version. So like, polymorph has always been something in and of around our playgroup. So I've just felt like this is a really good topic to approach as the three of us, because we just have so much experience playing so many flavors of it. General overview with polymorph. You turn a guy into another guy, and your goal is to cheat out a large creature using something with very low cost or free, using the literal card polymorph, but it can also be some newer things like Reality Scramble, Divergent Transformations. There's now a Planeswalker Luka that does this very well. If you, depending if you're on it, if you were fortunate or unfortunate enough to play during that standard, you know all about what Luka does, getting an Agent of Treachery in the case of standard. So the most common target that we see when you're talking about polymorph used to be Tidespout Tyrant. In today's day and age, now it's kind of Hullbreaker Horror, and some decks play a copy of each now. It just assembles that infinite mana engine. Your commander usually has an outlet for said engine. And that's kind of what all these decks kind of share in common for the most part. You polymorph into a creature that in one way or another wins you the game. And what's interesting about polymorph, the way that they're not the same, and the reason why so many different versions of the polymorph deck exist in CEDH, you two can either agree or disagree on this point, but in my head, just the way my brain works, I categorize polymorph decks into one of two columns. I think you can have a polymorph deck that has the commander as the main focus point of the deck and just happens to play polymorph effects. Or you can have a polymorph deck, like a true polymorph deck that's all in on casting polymorph as its plan A and just runs whatever commanders that facilitate that plan the best. Just a quick list, right? Urza, Shorokai, I think they're very commander-centric polymorph decks. Something like a, if you're playing Roger, that's with the intent of having the cheapest thing possible to make your polymorph turn the cheapest and fastest as you can. I think a lot of the low CMC, maybe less impactful commanders in a vacuum are the more polymorph-focused decks.
I could sort of get behind that. I guess I got to wrap my head around it more. I would just consider all the polymorph decks to be, you know, that level of focus, right? There's pros and cons to it, right? Like in my head, like Shorokai and Urza are giving you a slower poly line, but giving you more play as opposed to something like Roger, which is trying to be more of like a turbo polymorph deck, right? Kind of speaking on turbo combo versus something more of like the mid-rangey control category, I think is the big desertion. But I don't think that's that far off from where you're going with that. To circle back to kind of like for the listeners, just to make sure, we are calling these decks polymorph effects. Billy, why don't you kind of explain to us why it's called polymorph, or what polymorph is for that matter?
So polymorph is a card that reads as follows. 3 and a blue, sorcery, destroy target creature, it can't be regenerated. Its controller reveals cards from the top of his or her library until he or she reveals a creature card. The player then puts that card onto the battlefield, then shuffles all other cards revealed this way into his or her library. So that is like the main, the originator, so to speak, the progenitor of the polymorph strategy. And then,
there it
you
is.
Know, yeah, exactly. The one that all has morphed from, you could say, the polymorphers.
So it's similar to Reanimator in some sense, right? Like reanimation style decks. I know we've talked about a few of those in the episodes, but just a little bit different in deck building.
Almost. It has some of the similar restrictions, except for the fact that you get to, in the Reanimator strategy, run more creatures versus this where you're typically running less.
Approximately one would be the correct guess, if I'm mistaken.
One or two typically, yep.
Right. You want to guarantee that your polymorph wins you the game. One thing I think is really cool about polymorph, just like a Snapple fact, polymorph in the context of CEDH is one of the few cards that has kept its original like name and the archetype name and hasn't been really outclassed by another card yet. Like Reanimate is another one that like there hasn't been a better version of Reanimate. There hasn't really been a better version of polymorph. There's been side grades. There's been additional polymorph effects that have come out, but you're still running actual factual polymorph the card in your deck in 2022, which I think is awesome.
It's still 4 mana sorcery speed kind of effect, right? They haven't been able to scale that down aggressively to make a functionally better version of the card yet. So that's cool. So looking at it, as we talked about, there's a slew of them, correct? I think there's polymorph in blue. Is it restrictive to just blue? Is there other colors that we can utilize? What other type of polymorph effects can we gauge from in this type of deck?
We'll see going through the other decks in this list that blue red gives you the greatest number of options of polymorph effects. As you can see with Urza, right, you can play mono blue, and there's certainly strengths to playing a mono color EDH deck just as a whole, right? But that is the trade-off. If you're playing not blue and red, you are losing out on some number of polymorphs. Red actually might have more at this point. If I'm thinking about it.
I was gonna say, I think they have like 5, 6 maybe.
Yeah, because red has its Reality Scramble, Divergent Transformations, Transmogrify, yep. And I guess you can count Indomitable Creativity, although that's like a much more difficult one to slot into an EDH deck because it flips into artifacts as well. I get Creativity is more of like a 60-card format.
Yeah, and then the good ones for blue are typically Polymorph and Proteus Staff.
Correct.
Right, Proteus Staff.
Proteus Staff being interesting because that one actually lets you stack your deck. If I remember the card correctly.
Right. Yeah. Proteus Staff doesn't shuffle it. Placed on bottom in any order. So you, yeah, go through your deck basically and set up your order for the rest of the game. Assuming that the card you get just doesn't just win you the game right on the spot.
Yeah, which is typically the goal of this, right? When you're casting the Polymorph effect, this deck's, you know, Ad Nauseam, Doomsday, end of the game, Thassa's Oracle style card. This card ends the game. This is what I'm trying to do at this point in time.
Right.
Yeah, a big one for that was Fibblethip the Lost when he first came out. That was a big deck that involved, you know, you using Staff of, or Proteus Staff to Polymorph the Fibblethip, stack your deck, draw the cards, and basically it was just a big Doomsday deck at that point.
That one played no creatures. You literally cast your Fibblethip from your command zone and hit zero creatures. So you literally Proteus staffed back through to Fibblethip again, right? Because he would go back into your deck.
Yep, which is what allowed you to do the like Doomsday line effectively in mono blue.
He would be the bottom card of your deck, and then you would get him, and then you'd be able to go off and, you know, stack whatever you wanted.
Yeah, 80 card Doomsday pile.
So that's neat. Kind of talking through that approach then, let's get into, now that we kind of know and have talked through all of the different the color combinations, what the Polymorph deck is trying to do. I think we mentioned it a little bit, but let's spend some time talking about win cons. What are some common win cons you see? Like, what are we polymorphing into? I guess is my next question. What are we trying to hit? Obviously, I'm going to guess some big, dumb, scary, high-cost cards, but what are those cards typically?
In most cases, you would be correct. There are exceptions, which we'll get into. Like, they're all unique decks for a reason, right? The kind of go-to, right? The one that I would say, like, if you are new to playing a Polymorph deck, I would probably recommend that you start on one with a Tide Spout or a Hellbreaker Horror as your line. I think it's just the most singularly powerful creature right now in EDH. Like, there's not a lot of things that are better in play than a Hullbreaker. And even if you're not straight up winning the game, it's just an insanely good value creature that's difficult to remove, that if you draw it in your opening hand, it's uncounterable. It just has so much relevant text that I would definitely say like Hullbreaker is the de facto like most commonly played Polymorph target.
Yeah, I can see that. I think before then it was Tidespout, right? Which is the sidestep version of Hullbreaker Horror. But I think having the flash and uncounterability. Yeah, so those I think are the two. I think those are the great points. I think those are two probably more of the mainstream style ones to get through. They kind of combo with you well. I mean, being able to just bounce your rocks, generate your infinite mana. And then, you know, we're going to talk more about this later on when we get into like which commanders are typically paired with it. But that's where you see things like Urza and Shor Kai kind of making the scene as popular commanders for that reason, is because your commander is also an outlet for infinite mana, which is what these guys are generating, right? So they're not outright winning the game, as in like you slam the Hullbreaker Horror and you have a Thassa's Oracle style trigger. But you have a way to draw the rest of your deck and kind of cement a win con from there, which you have, you know, all the mana in the world to do with as you please.
Right. And the three different commanders that pair with that Hullbreaker or Tidespout line, you mentioned Urza. Shor Kai is able to, because it's an artifact and not a creature, you're able to cast the Shor Kai, tap it and draw the card, and then bounce the Shor Kai back to your hand and recast. So you are able to draw your deck with Shor Kai in a, you know, weird manner, but still the same nonetheless. And then finally, Thrasios and Rograk, the teamer polycrack conversion. Thrasios and infinite colorless mana. I mean, tale as old as time, right?
Yeah, I think those are probably three very strong commanders that if you wanted to get into a polymorph style deck, that I would look at. Obviously, the difference is being that the teamer one gives you access to both copies of all of the polymorph effects, as well as having Rograk in the command zone to be a very fast target to be able to transition into that. I believe the... Correct me if I'm wrong, but one card we didn't mention that is kind of in the polymorph vein is, isn't the teamer one on Oath of Druids too?
It certainly can be. Yeah, that's an important one to bring into the picture. Yeah, that's like the one really awkward green one that gets overlooked.
Very powerful in Vintage.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the only time that you would play an Oath of Druids like straight up in EDH, right? I mean, it's a little bit on the slow side, right? But it does cost 2 mana and not 4 mana. So similar to a, in my opinion, similar to a Hermit Druid line, you're casting it on 2. And if it gets around a turn cycle and you untap with that in play, then you are, you know, you are positioned to be taking the game home at that point.
It bears the mark of deal with this now or I'm going to win the game is really what it boils down to. And that
has, you know, I'll politely ask him not to.
I mean, you can politely ask him not to all you want. It also has potentiality of winning right at the as early as turn two, you know, because if you play it on turn one and somebody happens to play a creature because who knows why, you could just go off from there.
I mean, if you're not first in turn order, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you tend to play it after somebody drops their commander on turn two, and you're like, thanks, I needed you to do that. And now it's a race to remove the... like, it's also fun because now it's a race to remove that other person's commander, and even they want their commander removed, which is just less removal that you have to worry about. So in looking at those, I think those are, like I said, I think Shorakai Urza and Roger Thrasios are three very strong... mainstream, if you will, kind of versions of Polymorph. I think the Kraken decks also have some niche and some fringe commanders. I know for me, I've been kind of looking at Tevish Zot, Doom of Fools, as well as something like a Thrasios and more of like a Soul Tie Shell, having access to that because both of those commanders do the thing. And as you notice, as we talk through most of these commanders, you're looking for two things when building the deck. A commander that is a creature or can generate creatures pretty easily, and a infinite mana outlet typically in the command zone is what you're looking for at the very least the Polycracking version, and it's usually pretty common across the board, but that's kind of the bread and butter, like low cheap commander that you can get into play and create creatures for this polymorph effect, and then a way to utilize the infinite mana afterwards.
And another interesting thing that these decks do is finding ways to cheat these enablers into play as well, not just in the command zone. You'll see spells or in some cases lands that generate tokens are also things that all these decks are looking for as well. So for example, let me actually check that. Hold on. Is Urza playing a man land at this point?
Is there a what?
Urza is not playing a man land, no.
Because it's not really on correct. The like that's an example of like Urza's not really like Polymorph plan A, in my opinion. Like, I think if it was, it would be running something like, you know, Blink Moth, Ink Moth kind of thing. Teemer Polycracken, you could definitely make an argument for running a manland. Urza Saga, wow, you know, it has more relevant text than it ever has before. It's already a great card for the deck. You're running so much artifact mana as it is. You're getting your Soul Ring potentially, or your mana vault to enable your infinite mana turn, but also Urza Saga can make a construct token, which you can then polymorph away. Another really exciting one that has so much more bonus text. It's like, it's the one in the cycle that I think gets overlooked, but Sokenzin. Yeah.
Yeah. The one that makes the channel land that makes the 2/1s. Yep.
Yep. Sokenzin, channel it, make two tokens. Couldn't be a more perfect card for a polymorph deck because you are using a land slot to enable your polymorph target. That can't get any better.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think those are all great. Those are all great examples, and that's what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to create tokens and create fodder for these archetypes as we go through. And that's why I mentioned something like a Tevish Zot, which was interesting because it gives you access to the Black Tutors, and he in and of himself comes down, makes the thralls that we can use for sacrifice, and then can then be bounced and recast repeatedly to make an insane amount of tutors and then start drawing through your deck to draw your deck. And then again,
yep, you get that mid game value, and you also get a way to dig to the things you want. And then yep. Playing black gives you significantly better tutors to get said polymorph.
Absolutely. Anything else we want to talk through on Hullbreak or Horror Tidespout stuff?
Just like the notable thing that you're not on a Thassa's Oracle line with these decks. It's a strange world when you're playing a blue combo that doesn't evolve it at this point, but yeah, you are restricted. So there's a lot of sacrifices that you have to make for really any polymorph deck. But because of those sacrifices, you get to play around, incidentally, a lot of common hate pieces as well, such as, I mean, the big one, you no longer care about Torpor Orb, because you're not relying on ETB. You're not really on Dockside or Thoracle. So common hate pieces for most of the format, you get to get around a lot of it. And that's like a big reason to be on this style of deck right now.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some decks that do run the Oracle combo, especially if you're running Indomitable Creativity. Usually one of the more common ones is you crack the two pieces, because that one requires two pieces, and you get Leveler and Thorkel, and you win like that.
Which one is on that right now?
I mean, Divergent Kaikar is on that one. You also have Divergent Transformation also does the same thing.
Divergent's usually safer, because yeah, you would die to Creativity. You have to jump through more hoops for that one.
You need five mana.
Yeah, but doesn't...
No, that's Madcap Experiment. The one you're thinking of is Madcap Experiment.
Right. Yeah, it's Madcap. Mm-hmm. Never mind. We're good.
I know my polymorph effects, sir.
You're good. I thought that was the one that dealt you down.
No, Madcap Experiment is one. I was going to bring that one up, because that was actually used in, a modern deck, where you would pop one of your artifacts and then polymorph into a card like Platinum Empyrean.
You're not running Indomitable Creativity, though.
You absolutely can run Indomitable Creativity.
Do you not run any artifacts in your deck?
You don't have to if you're doing it that way. You could literally run both of those.
Like you're not running, like, because Creativity flips into artifacts, right?
Indomitable Creativity wants you to find an artifact. You can sacrifice artifacts or creatures, and then you flip until you hit an artifact or a creature equal to the number you sacrificed.
Basically. Right, but I'm saying, like, you can, like, hit, like, your Mox Opal or something instead of your creature.
Correct. If you played Creativity, you would not be able to play artifacts in the deck besides Leveler and Thassa's Oracle. You would basically be on, like, rituals, right? You'd be on Jeskha's Will, Pyretic Ritual, Desperate Ritual, maybe Seething Song.
You could even use Infernal Plunge, because if you're doing Kaikar, you're making the tokens, you can sack the tokens. That is the safer one. It's called Divergent Kaikar for a reason.
There are definitely lines there, but kind of moving away, and as we begin to transition, are there any other fringe or unique creatures you can polymorph into, as opposed to the two Tyrants, Hullbreaker and Tidespout? Is there any other polymorph decks floating around out there? Why?
Well, if there were not, we wouldn't be making an episode on it, Cypher.
Fair enough.
I mean, you know the answer. You're giving me the alley-oop. I get it. I mean, where do we start, right? Where do we start with the spiciness? Do we just go with, like, what do we start with?
I think we started with the best ones, and I think we go by two color on up, so like the Malcolm decks into the three color.
That's fair. We'll go in order. We'll go in the order that I have these tabs open. How about that?
Sure.
So in contrast to getting a big dumb crab, we have a Malcolm list, and this can be either with Roger or with Kedis, just a blue-red deck. So it's pretty bare bones in what it's trying to do, and the one creature you are running is a Glinthorn Buccaneer. If you maybe have seen, like, the Tropical Malcolm deck, you are aware of the synergy between Malcolm and Glinthorn being a win condition in the combat step. Glinthorn deals a damage to each opponent, and Malcolm says whenever a pirate, which Glinthorn Buccaneer is, deals damage to an opponent, you make a treasure, and that is able to basically burn out your opponents using the effect of Glinthorn. So pretty low to the ground. The advantage of this one is that drawing your one polymorph creature in your opening hand is actually a good thing rather than a restrictive thing in this deck. So that is, like, the biggest reason to be on this deck, in my opinion, is just, like, the low to the groundness. There's got to be a better term. Help me out. Cost efficiency. There we go.
We got there.
You did it.
Thank you. I thank you for believing in me, too. You're like, you're both, like, in silence, like, now Wise going to figure it out himself.
I was just letting you roll.
So blue-red Glinthorn Polymorph is a really cool one. What else do we have here? We have the coolest, fringiest one, in my opinion, is Arden and Roger being a white-red Polymorph deck, which is kind of funky. A lot of people just call it Secret Godo because it lets you kind of cheat a way to play Godo in your command zone. So you're playing red-white Godo with all the trimmings of a traditional Godo deck, trying to get the Helm of the Host in play with it. And if you're polymorphing into Godo, it can actually make your combo cheaper. So classic Godo, new taste. It's like the new Coke, except probably not terrible.
Yeah, that one was really interesting. So kind of walk us through how does that one exactly go per se? So Godot's the win con, right? Everybody should know the Godot deck. So you're using that one requires a little more setup is what I'm trying to get at versus the regular polymorph decks.
From my understanding, you're just polymorphing into the Godot, right? You're doing the count to equipping, getting a Godot in play and equipping Helm of the Host to it. What's nice is that Arden reduces the equip cost of Helm of the Host, being that you pay 3 for the Arden. It can be on your combo turn or it can be prior to your combo turn, and Arden does a free equip for you. So as long as you get the Godot in play and the Helm in play with the Godot, Arden takes care of that equip cost for you. So it takes your what, 11 mana normally, 11 mana line, and reduces it significantly.
Yeah, so the only major exception there is you actually do need, and that's why you get away with having, Arden and Rograk in the command zone, right? You know, we said before that you really wanted like some type of infinite mana outlet there. Well, in this case, you do need both commanders in play, which is a little different because you have to have the creature to sacrifice to the polymorph effect, and you need to have the Arden in play to reduce the cost of the Helm of the Host equip, but does significantly reduce the mana output to get there from what, like from 11 to like 7 or something, 4, 5, 6, 7 or something like that.
Depends on the card that you have, right? Like what it reduces it to is the cost of your commander Arden, which is 3. So 3 mana plus the cost of a polymorph. And the cost of your Arden doesn't have to be necessarily on the combo turn, right? Like if you're doing it all together on the same turn, your average polymorph effect is what, like 4 mana? So you're paying 7 mana for your line if you're doing it all at the same time. Or alternatively, you do 3 then 4 because your Roger costs 0. So it can be incredibly cost effective. At the very least, on paper, it's cheaper than a Godot line by 4. If not more, if you split it up over the course of 2 turns.
Yeah. So overall, it's a unique way to do it in a very interesting way in Boros to have a polymorph style deck. It's a little more, I think that version is a little more frail than most, right? Being in the fact that you don't have a ton of interaction or permissions to help promote your polymorph line, but still very, very, very cool to see those cards come through.
That is the nature of red white. And like, you can also go on the flip side and argue that in other ways, right? It's not as fragile as traditional Godot in the sense that, wow, you're in white, you get access to silence, you get access to, not Grand Abolisher, scratch that, cut that. you could run like an Inquisitor's Flail or something if you wanted, I don't know. But I mean, at the very least, you get access to a copy of Silence, which, you know, every combo deck, don't leave home without it, right? If you're in white.
Yeah, being in white is a big bonus because of the Silence effects that you get access to, whether it be Silence, Orm's Chant, Mandate of Peace, like those all help a lot. Obviously, you can't use Mandate of Peace if you're going a Secret Godot route, but it does, you know, do the silence effects. I know I'm forgetting one. I can't remember the last one. Abeyance, that's the one.
Going into the last one, I think Cypher, you should be talking about this one since you mentioned the strengths of having a polymorph deck that includes black as a color. This last one is interesting to me because in all of these polymorph decks, they appear to be kind of lower on the number of colors that it plays. I feel like when you're running traditionally a 4 or 5 color deck, you're not looking at polymorph as your first line, seeing that there are so many super powerful low to the ground haymaker combos out there that when you have that many cards at your disposal, it's difficult to put yourself into a small polymorph box only playing one creature out of 4 or 5 colors of all the creatures ever printed. So yeah, this one is interesting to me because it's a 4 color polymorph list.
Which one?
Tana Timna. This is Tana Timna. What's the actual deck title? Kitty Cats, and there's a little emoji of a cat.
Oh, it's the Rise of Cats version of that one with Luca.
It's a polymorph deck that runs 36 creatures. Let's unpack why.
So this version of Tim Natana, which typically most listeners, if you look on something like the DDB or have played around the CDH world before, know as Blood Pod, a sans blue stacks deck. This is kind of trying to do similar things. It has a lot of the same elements, but you're not playing the traditional polymorph effects. Instead, you're using a special polymorph planeswalker called Luca, Coppercoat Outcast. And what's special about him is his -2 ability exiles target creature you control, and then you reveal cards until you reveal a creature with greater converted mana cost than the creature you sacrificed. So in Blood Pod, you're playing a 3-mana CMC commander in Timna and a 4-mana commander in Tana, but most of your really good effects are at 3 or less, right? You have your Archons, your Opposition Agents, your Ranger Captains, your Eidolons, your Grand Abolishers, your Draniths. All of that costs less. So what you're able to do is you're able to use your Luca on any creature that costs 3 CMC or more and guarantee that you're going to hit something higher. And the only legal creature you're playing above that CMC is Razaketh. So basically, with Luca in play, you are guaranteed to convert your Timna or your Tana into a Razaketh, the Foul-Blooded. And then from there can kind of take on a Razaketh-style loop where you can go and kind of set up a Leon and Relic Order loop where you can tutor everything out into something like a Mayhem Devil that'll close out the game and win you the game from there. But from there, you can kind of set up those old school Razaketh style lines while still being a kind of reanimator, polyhorn, stacksy style deck. But a very unique one that actually is doing similar things to polymorph, but you get to play about 36 creatures in your deck list.
Right. You're already trying to cheat when you're building a polymorph deck, and now you're almost like double cheating, where you're not only running a polymorph line, but you get to play all the creatures besides that. You get to have your cake and eat it.
Yeah, Luca really is an interesting version of the polymorph style effect in that he does look for a creature card with converted mana with greater converted mana cost. So it's really kind of a unique way to do that. Well, higher mana value, yeah. So yeah, but that's what it says on the card. But that's what's really interesting about it, is he kind of is a unique way to build that style effect, because you could do that same thing in other colors technically if you wanted to build that way as well.
We call that cheating squared.
I think you call that cheating squared. I don't think I've ever called
it's me and squared. The voices in my head calling it, dude. Come on, don't call me out like that. God.
So before we move on, let's take a quick little coffee break and talk about the coffee of the week.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's out of arm's reach. I thought Billy had it because no. I saw you like picking it up earlier. No, you picked it up earlier.
I did. I read it.
But it's over there.
Sure is.
I can't get it.
That's unfortunate. We could also talk about the newer ones as well.
Oh, I have that. That's literally my backpack here. Okay, good. Talk about yours. I've got mine right here.
All right.
You owe me a pumpkin spice.
I know you. I've come prepared. I've had a different pumpkin spice every week, bro.
All right, let's start this off.
To be fair, this is like the second one.
Yeah, so, I mean, right?
Billy, Bill, William, tell us all. What is your pumpkin spice blend of the week?
My pumpkin spice blend of the week is, it's actually from a local shop. It's just straight up a pumpkin spice blend. It was roasted. It was whole bean, which was interesting. I've never had a whole bean pumpkin spice. Usually the pumpkin spice is added after the grinding process, but this was actually like roasted in it, and it offered a deeper flavor. It was more like an actual pumpkin flavor, which I really enjoyed. I really got the nutmeg notes and everything out of that, as opposed to like the Starbucks pumpkin spice, where it's just like, hey, here's a generic clove, nutmeg, cinnamon, call it a day. Here you go. Enjoy it. And I do, to be quite honest, but hey, you know, who's counting? But yeah.
I think you hit it on the head with that flavor description, because like it really did taste a lot like an authentic pumpkin pie filling kind of note.
And I am a huge original pumpkin pie. Like actual flavored like pumpkin, not that overly sweet pumpkin flavor than it is, you know, when you get from a store.
Yeah, we are also like criminally far into October without having pumpkin pie. At least me. Did anyone else get any yet?
Yes.
I think I've had some.
At least once a week.
Wow. Okay, well, I guess I need to fix that on my end then. Fine.
You need to step up your game.
I thought other people would have been there for me in solidarity, and I guess, like, in reality, I'm just all alone here in this miserable existence of not pumpkin pie.
Aren't we all?
Well, apparently not. Apparently it's just me.
I mean, Chris is wherever he is. I'm over here. You're over there. You know, we're all alone.
Does Texas even know what a pumpkin is?
Wow, just...
I went to a pumpkin farm last weekend, I
think. Just get him docs, too.
I mean, good luck finding him in the entire state of Texas.
Fair.
Typing like, for vigorously.
You can try. Yeah, I got something from the same place. It is a... It's a Brazilian roast. It's okay. I really don't have a whole lot to say about this one. It was okay. It was very worth $12. I would definitely spend like the amount of $12 on another bag of this. Is it the best thing I've had? No. Is it the best Brazilian roast I've had? Also no. But it does have a little blue bird on it. So whoever designed this has recently seen Rio. And... Yeah, they did their best, and I respect it. I will say that the beans in this bag are very fresh. It blooms like no other. It bloomed up like a sponge. Like, I was, like, incredibly impressed on that. But, you know, I try to focus on the good, and I'm going to absolutely finish this bag by the end of the month.
Pumpkin.
So I guess another question that I wanted to bring up in talking about these polymorph cards and these polymorph effects that we have kind of running through is, I think there are two unique cards that feel pretty similar to the style of effect where you really just want to have a big creature in your deck and kind of cheat it into play. And that's kind of taking back to a very old legacy deck that was popular Sneak and Show. So the two cards in question, and I just wanted to gauge your thoughts on things like Sneak Attack and Show and Tell, and you know, do they have a home in Polydex? If so, why or why not?
Initial knee-jerk reaction from me, probably not. The advantage of Sneak and Show in a 60-card format is that you're on multiple copies of Sneak, and you're on multiple copies of your big payoff creatures. In EDH, you know, it's just more difficult to get one creature into your hand if you only have one copy, versus with polymorph, it just has to be in your entire deck versus in your hand. So I think it's a little bit difficult to pull off. You're asking for a lot to go in your favor to enable that. Not to mention that in this format, right? Like the advantage of Sneak and Show and Legacy is that other players aren't necessarily on anything big. Like, you're expecting what, like a Murktide at the biggest in most cases, in most matchups, like a Murktide is the biggest thing they can do to you. In EDH, you can straight up lose off of that, right? Like more regularly, I should say, because other decks also play Hullbreaker. Other decks also have combo pieces in the form of creatures. Someone flips in a Niv-Mizzet, a Seaborn Muse, even like a Grand Abolisher is pretty backbreaking if it's about to be their turn. So you really have to be careful, I think, with Show and Tell and, you know, Eureka, Hypergenesis, all those like similar kind of effects where everyone gets a turn at it, because especially in a 4-player game, it's not you're not playing a game of war where it's you versus your card versus their card. It's you versus three people.
I think what it boils down to and what Wai's trying to say there is it's a totally different deck. You can't really classify it as a polymorph deck, even though it kind of gives the appearance of being a polymorph deck. Sneak Attack even kind of lends its best game plan to a deck like Sisse Gigantha, where you could put Gigantha into your hand, sneak it into the battlefield, give it haste, and then combo out right then and there. That's really where you see it in its prime. As for, you know, Show and Tell, why kind of hit it on the head? You know, you don't really want to give your opponents being able to bring something in. It's a 100-card singleton, so the odds of them having their combo piece in their hand is like, eh, but like, can you imagine a world where you show and tell, they put in Thassa's Oracle and then Demonic Consult in response? How does that make you feel?
Dead, probably.
Yeah, I want show and tell to be better than it is, but it's not good. I think sneak attack's interesting, and I think sneak attack's worth a discussion point. I think sneak attack's close. I think there's a big difference between show and tell. I think show and tell is actively a bad card. I think sneak attack's a little more interesting and nuanced of a card comparative to show and tell. I mean, I think show and tell is actively just challenging for those reasons. But I think sneak attack's unique in the sense that it does let you cheat that creature into play pretty aggressively. I think it needs more creatures than the polymorph deck wants to offer. So, you know, like, there are some tyrant decks that are on two tyrants, and I think that's probably getting closer to sneak attack being good. But I think just having one creature kind of invalidates the sneak attack. And I do think it's probably better in like a Sisse deck, or I've been interested in it in like a Protean Hulk style deck where you can cheat your Hulk into play and then immediately just go to your end step and let your Hulk die and then, you know, build a loop from there from that stance as well too. So there's a lot of unique lines for that card. I think that card's interesting, but yeah, I do think that it's, as you're looking for ways to cheat these big creatures into play, I think they're more of a trap than they are beneficial in these polymorph shells. Looking at kind of the mulligan section here, this is a typical section we do post our coffee break, where we kind of run through some hands and what we're looking for. Well, in this, we talked a lot about various different decks, which I think have various different mulligan strategies. But why talking about polymorph specifically, is there any like key things you should be really looking for or looking to try and do with a polymorph deck hand?
I think that it kind of goes back to my opinions on what each deck is trying to do. I think if you're playing an Urza or a Shorokai list, for example, I think it's important to just get established and keep a generally strong hand and then find a way to get the polymorph later. I think there's a question for Billy too, with like Shorokai, for example. Like, I feel like just having a polymorph in your opening hand isn't a snap keep for Shorokai the way that it is for Secret Godo, for example.
Looking at it holistically, when you look at the pod composition, it really depends on that, because Shorokai it wants to play the long game. I know I talked about it ad nauseum in the Shorokai episode, that Shorokai wants to play the long game. It wants to control the board, it wants to make sure that nobody gets to do their thing, and it wants to do it well. And then it wants to combo out. Like what I said, with the idea of like a Secret Godo or a Turbo, I'm going to call it a Turbo Polymorph deck. You know, that's what I'm going to call it. A Turbo Polymorph deck, you want to be rushing that Polymorph, that Divergent Transformation, that whatever card you have as soon as possible, because you don't want to, you're not running those protection pieces like you would in a Shorokai, for instance.
What is the most, like, I don't know, time effective way to run this? Like, should we each pick like one polymorph deck and run like two hands with each one? Or
I don't think we want to run hands at all.
No hands. Fine. That's fine. That's fair.
Yeah. One of my hands is occupied holding the microphone, so I can't.
Well, we'll make up for it in the next episode. That's fine.
We'll do.
I promise. Eight.
I think you guys missed the low hanging fruit there. And I think the biggest thing to take away when you're looking for mulligans is the last thing you want to see in your opening hand is the polymorph target. Much better serviced inside of the deck than sitting in your hand. I think overall, even in the turbo, as we're going to call them, turbo polymorph decks, I like to think most of these polymorph decks kind of want to be more of like a mid-range control style game plan, because you are packing your deck with a lot more pieces of interaction and ways to kind of generate that while trying to generate your turbo pieces to win the game. So I do tend to like just having a good swath of hand that's able to kind of play through the game, as most of these are like the teamer colors giving you the best interaction. You have a couple tutors, you're not necessarily have the best tutors to find the pieces, but having those small bits of interaction, I think, really, really help facilitate what the game is trying to do. You're not trying to be the fastest deck at the table. You're really trying to play the little slower game to set up that easy win through there. So that's sort of what I'm, what I'd be looking for, some good interaction, some good mana, and then maybe a tutor or two to help find a polymorph effect, and then you just kind of go from there.
It's smooth sailing at that point.
All right, guys. Well, that sounds like an episode on polymorph decks, polymorph effects. Any final thoughts from the crew before we kind of move into closing segments?
Can we give a shout out to tournament coming up?
Is this episode going to be live before then?
I don't
have a calendar in front of me. General question. I don't know if this will be live.
It will be going live the day of, hypothetically.
Then no, okay. Because why would we shout out the tournament that's happening?
Okay, that's fine. I didn't know.
You idiot! Look at what you're missing out on as we speak.
Correct. Wow, you guys are sure watching an episode while a tournament's going on that you should totally go to.
That's what we call augmented reality, except it's depressing.
Wow.
Cyberpunk 2022.
I mean, this reality that we live in sucks.
I think that is a wrap. Thanks everybody so much for listening. All links to all the lists we talked about today will be in the show notes below. And while you're there, be sure to check out our link tree to follow us on all of our social media platforms as well. So with that, I'm Chris, aka Cypher.
I'm Billy, aka Cork.
I'm Y.
And I'm all out of coffee.
Peace, guys.